Today's show, we talk some playoff, how it's getting set up, NIL at Pitt, and with Bryce Underwood, plus intriguing and race for the case games.
Time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
Be like, you guys work that out. I'll be at the hotel bar.
Russ Gellinger.
I cover a lot of conferences. I should have put that on the list, too.
And SI's Pat Forty.
You would be the worst committee member of all time.
Here's Pat, Russ, and Dan.
All right, welcome to the pod. Talked a bunch of Ohio State, Penn State on the last pod. You want to hear that? We'll talk some more during Race for the Case. Wanted to get into this because it's a potential that could happen with Ohio State, Penn State. College football playoff had a little meeting, a webinar. What were they trying to educate us? Trying to educate the media. Good luck, Rich Clark, new executive director. Not only are we hard to educate, but we'll get it wrong anyway. And even if you educate every beat writer in the country, someone will say something on TV that's wildly wrong. That has a much bigger microphone. I always find that funny.
Dan, it's almost like you know how the media sausage is made. It's interesting.
Yeah. Both teams have the color blue. They can't play in the quarterfinals. I read that. Anyway, most of the stuff we kind of knew, there were just two things that he reiterated that I thought were pretty interesting. One is rematches are going to happen. This is something that gets college football fans very upset, or I don't know about upset, but they get kind of fired up. I'd rather there weren't. Rather see more new teams play each other, but this is just how it's going to be with the two massive conferences in the Big Ten and the SEC. And then the other is he said, and this has been something we've been talking about, what happens when do you want to go to the college to your conference championship game and then lose? Or would you rather just not make it and come in third? And we have seen through the years teams get in because somebody lost a conference championship game. Ohio State did it to Penn State 1 year. Penn State actually, we saw it with USC losing a couple years ago. Ohio State got in different times. Clark's line, I don't think a team would be unduly penalized if they lost in a conference championship game. And now educated person, let me tell you that I don't think is not a, yeah. Anyway, what'd you think there, Ross?
We talked about it back in April. You know, the CFP met. I think I was there in Dallas, and we did our show from there. And one of the things discussed from there with the commissioners, you know, who control all this, was rematches. And they decided in a 12-team playoff not to implement any kind of policy to avoid rematches. If you go back, Dan, to the last 10 years, and you applied the 12-team playoff, and you also considered the realignment moves, they would have been 7 first round conference versus conference rematches. So you all but 3 years, you got at least one. Now again, a little odd doing that while considering the conference realignment, you know, but there's no doubt that we'll have some rematches, and there's a good chance that in the first round, we'll have one every other year or so, or maybe more. I kind of think that they, you know, the NCAA tournament has a policy, obviously, that it kind of has a protocol where they avoid the first two rounds, right? Rematches in the first two rounds, I believe, and it are conference versus conference games in the first couple rounds. And I thought the CFP would do that, but there's fear, and I remember talking to Bill Hancock, former director, about this. There was real fear that you'd be contorting the bracket and the seating to avoid potential rematches in the first round that would unduly penalize other teams. And so while I understand that, it would be great if we avoided, and maybe there doesn't have to be a protocol. right, or a policy. Maybe the committee members would just kind of do it and avoid the first round conference games.
Yeah. Instead of a protocol, maybe a preference that's not written in. I'm with Dan on this, that I like it. It do not break the bracket to avoid a rematch. It would be nice if you can, but this, the basketball, it's easier to do because it's a bigger bracket. You got more wiggle room, more places to move people around. This is a 12-team deal. And I saw somebody said, you know, when this first came up the other day, just, you know, can you just change a 5 to a 6 or, you know, to avoid a 5-12, 6-11? No, because a 5 seed is a really significant seed in this bracket. It's an advantageous seed. And if somebody deserves the 5 seed, you give it to them as opposed to, well, we don't want them to have a rematch with somebody. I just think the bracket is, it's too small and there's too many barriers to fudging things around just to avoid two teams playing each other that happen to play in October.
Yeah, I'm with the committee here, and Hancock was right, and this move is right. It just, first off, Pat's correct. The 5 seed is going to be unbelievable. You get the 5 seed, you're generally the next best team that didn't win the SEC or Big Ten. That, by definition, you are the top team that didn't win. So you're probably a one-loss team that only lost to the champion of the SEC or the Big Ten. And you would normally be ranked like third in the country. And your reward for that, which we should be rewarding, because we want the regular season to matter, which is why I want more home field. I'm not even getting in the clunky way that they're trying to figure out these neutral sites. Is that'll just make your head spin. We can deal with that later, but you get to play the 12 seed as a 5, which many years we believe will be the group of 5 champion, and at home, and that is a good reward, rather than as the 6 seed, you're playing number 11, which is going to be a power conference team most years, and potentially, like, look, Ohio State loses on Saturday by 1 point at Penn State, they could end up being an 11 seed. Would you rather play them as the 6, or would you rather play Boise State as the 5, right? No offense to Boise State. I actually think Boise State is going to be a stronger not group of 5 team than most years. I think this is a really good group of 5 team. But anyway, you win that, you then get to play as the 5 seed on a neutral site, the worst conference champion of the Power 4, whether that is, generally speaking, a Big 12 team, an ACC team, or like some upset team. Somehow. And that could be particularly true in one of these leagues where maybe, you know, somebody sneaks into the championship game with their conference championship game with 2 or 3 bang. So you've got a very nice path to the semifinal. And so, but I think it's the perception that you're doing anything but following protocol is what they want to avoid, because all of a sudden everyone's going to start screaming, well, if you're doing that, you're favoring this team, you're favoring this league, and this committee is going to be under enormous issues trying to deal with it. And we're going to have our first rankings on Tuesday night are going to come out.
Oh,
and
God.
Yeah, the ranking show.
Already?
Yeah.
Oh, God.
And I've said on from the start, night. We've said it all the time, this is it on election night. Great. We'll have some real controversy here. Forget, I mean, this is important stuff, Pat.
Yeah.
We're going to have some real controversies. Oh, the fake ballots of a top 25. It doesn't matter. I'm more interested. But anyway, you get into this situation where you're going to undermine the credibility. They needed to get rid of the show. I know they're not going to do it because they got to prop up Maction or like some college basketball game in the middle of November. But your committee loses credibility every single week when they rank these teams and then have to explain it. And they don't follow the same plan each week, and they come up with metrics, and the poor man or woman who's got to be the chair and get grilled every week on why someone's ranked 19th and not 24th, and game control and road turnover ratios, and these things come up. It's really important that this committee has credibility, and they will start undermining it on Tuesday. And so They need to have the best they can be to look like, hey, we just laid out our 12. If there's rematches, there's rematches. Look, did anyone hate Oregon and Washington playing a rematch last year in the Pac-12 championship game? Would anyone hate if Penn State fans might hate it, but would anyone else hate it if Ohio State and Oregon played again in the Big Ten championship? Like, rematches have happened. They happen in Alabama and Georgia in the SEC title game. Things have happened in the past. You deal with it. I think you got to stick to the protocol.
Yeah, for sure. And you're right. The committee will begin absolutely just taking bullets voluntarily with this dumb plan for a dumb TV show while laboring under the weight of Greg Sankey having said things need to go extremely well or incredibly well, i.e. we're watching and we're ready to just take over this thing whenever we bloody well feel like it. So I have always wondered why people actually volunteer to do this committee. Actually, they don't volunteer, they get paid. But and even more now, it's going to be, I think...
How much you get paid to be on the committee?
They don't say. They never say. It's a stipend or something like that, they call it. But
wait, I might now be interested.
You would be the worst committee member of all time.
They would never let me on. I'd be great.
No, you'd be terrible.
I'd be great at this.
You would be terrible.
I'd skip three of them. Yes.
You'd skip three of them.
Like, you guys work that out. I'll be at the hotel bar.
Yeah, you'd lose interest halfway through on a couple others. No. But anyway, Godspeed to these people doing this committee. Ward Manuel is the chair this year, so he's the guy that has to sit on front of the ESPN cameras and answer all the questions and defend. You know, people just throwing stuff at a wall for several weeks.
Imagine if he was the chair last year and everyone would have been like,
yeah.
Did Connor Stallions do it?
Yeah. Yeah. Over the offseason, I don't know if it would have been this offseason or last year, I don't remember, but there was a thought, there was a suggestion, as we have said many times in the pod, that they not do this. Right, that they not do the rankings until later in the season, maybe before the championship games and then after the championship games, the final, and that's it. And I had heard that ESPN was like, no. We need our show and our millions of viewers. So here we are. You know, we like to often say in college athletics that and you hear this a lot about the influence of TV and TV making a lot of decisions. And in this case, I think, you know, a reason that they do this unnecessarily is certainly for TV.
Yeah. Yeah. There's no other reason to do it. And it wastes these guys' time going down this many things. You could just do a Zoom and, you know, do a practice one. But anyway, that's what they're doing. The thing that I'm most I'm intrigued about that they will never do is just have a single computer formula as the guidance, and then everyone knows what the computer formula is and you can follow along with it. And I know that we hate math and college and computers and things like, I mean, it's college football, but not really. We'd rather have, we got some guys here who know football. Like, I don't really want people who know football. I want people who can analyze whether someone's like, let's say you're a guy, like, let's say they invent the spread offense and you don't think that's football, right? There were a whole bunch of guys like that. This isn't football. Well, I watch, bring some old basketball coach in to watch the NBA now where all, if they figured out all you do is shoot three pointers, right? You go, well, this isn't basketball. It's working for the Celtics. I don't know. They're playing, there's a ball in the Koo Hoops. I don't care what you think. But in college hockey, they have a thing called pairwise, this computer formula that mimics the committee. They also have a committee. It's almost like you got a driverless car, but you put someone in there anyway, in case everything goes haywire and somehow the just in case a 4-4-20 team gets, now a little easier in hockey. There's more games. There's all this stuff. There's less teams. But it's funny that in the same Ward Manuel has a hockey team. Let's put it that way. A lot of the hockey, the same athletic departments that are like, this works over here, but we ain't doing it over here. So I, being on this committee, whew.
Well, there's a topic here we could spend a lot more time on, but it is the how the selection committee in general and why it is a focus point for the Big Ten specifically, but for Big Ten, SEC, Big 12, and ACC, the power conferences on what the future, you know, is of the selection committee and how the teams are selected. I think that eventually we'll have a change there. I just don't know what they'll change to. Will it be some kind of smaller committee? Will it be more based on, you know, the multiple AQs that we've talked about a lot? There's a lot of people, I think, at that level, that power conference level, that want to remove the subjectivity of a committee from this, or as much as they can.
Still gotta, I guess, still gotta seed them, though.
Yeah,
like you have to seed them, and you have to pick the at-larges. Still, yeah. You're right. And, but you limit their ability. You limit their ability if you do that.
What do you like? We know 10 of the teams. 10 of the teams are going to be set, and then maybe there's a debate over the last two spots. There'll be like four teams going for it. Maybe maybe not even that. It's a seeding,
but
wait till they do home field all the way.
The thing that kills me is the people that are concerned about the subjectivity of the committee are incredibly subjective themselves. They're incredibly self-interested here. I mean, it's not like Greg Sankey and Tony Petitti are sitting there saying, let's do what's best for everyone. Oh, no. They're not. So, you know, I mean, I have had some qualms with what the committee's done a couple of times. 2014 was pretty controversial. Last year was very controversial. I still felt like Florida State got a bad deal, but we saw a better playoff without them than with them. But, like, this idea that they've somehow done a lousy job, I think, is false. Which I think is generally the case too with the basketball committees, but it's just it's an excuse to grab more control of this thing.
It's pointless control. You're grabbing control over something you already have control over.
Yeah.
Someone's got to make a call at the end. Someone's got to make a call. And like I said, last year, I think we were kind of in agreement. FSU deserved to be in that playoff. I do not like a committee that says we don't like your second string quarterback. Especially when they once put Ohio State in because they said, we like your third string quarterback.
Yeah.
Like, what are we doing here? But at the same time, I was like, yeah, give me Michigan, Alabama. And that thing turned out to be every bit the game that we wanted. So, you know, it's a tough call. Well,
I go back to, I've said this a lot on the show before, like I think it was 2018 or 2019. I did the mock selection thing in Dallas. And I remember walking, you know, and you sit in the same seats as the selection committee, the same room. You do the same things. You look at the same data. You do the same comparisons on the big screen. And you get into the weeds on seating based on these odd statistics, like the game control thing and all that stuff. And I remember leaving that room thinking, what in the F are we doing? The process of determining the teams and the seeding, getting into the weeds on these, you know, silly kind of statistics just is absurd to me. So there's some way that we could limit that. I am for it. But, I look at the models of the NFL and of other pro sports where you it is literally determined and slotted from what happens on the field. And I wish we could get something like that. The problem is college sports just isn't set up like that, you know, and it's hard to do.
Ross, you went to Pitt this week. See our friend Coach Narduzzi, Pat Narduzzi, always got something to say. And
yes, he does.
We like Coach Narduzzi. I'm glad he's winning because I was a little nervous we might lose him as a head coach there after last year. They play SMU this week. They're 7-0, man. They're 7-0. And I think it's like Indiana overshadowed Pitt. It's just like, here they are. Two great, really good wins over, really dramatic wins over West Virginia and Cincinnati and all that. They haven't been as dominant, I guess, on the scoreboard as Indiana, but Pitt 7-0. They're playing SMU. Huge game in the ACC this weekend. And gave you one great quote and a great concept. After they won three games last year, he said, this quote is great. I said, blank, I have to clean house. So he fired almost everyone, including our guy Tim Salem, who is the famously the tight ends coach there. He's now coaching special teams, I think, at Georgia Tech this week. Is that right?
He just got promoted like the special teams guy from like an analyst position. For people who don't remember, Tim Salem was the guy that's so gung-ho that he drinks flat Mountain Dew. He unscrews the caps to make sure they're flat because the bubbles slow him down drinking. So he wants the caffeine to jolt as fast as possible. So that's our guy, Tim Salem.
I mean,
yes, he doesn't have time.
There are other forms of caffeine these days. Plenty of forms of caffeine where you don't have to unscrew a top and let it sit there.
When we used to do our, he had no time for carbonation, I think is what he said. Mm-hmm. He's too busy.
Yeah.
Doesn't have time for carbonation. He's coaching them tight ends up. Yeah. We love Tim Salem, and we were a little, I was not happy with Coach Narduzzi for that move, but it's worked out for everybody, I guess. And the Mountain Dew distributor down in Atlanta now, poor guy in Pittsburgh, like, dang, I had kids in college. How am I going to pay for this?
Yeah.
So that's my best customer. Anyway, they're 7-0. His other bit was he said, I stopped paying the players, took the NIL instead of giving everyone some money. He said, you guys won three games. You ain't worth it. And the players, at least according to Pat Narduzzi, were like, yeah, you guys got a point. He wants hungry players.
What a time in college athletics, huh? Could you imagine somebody reading this story like 3 years ago?
What in the world is going on?
I'm quoting a booster who's given $20 million to the football program, who's controlling player salaries and openly discussing it, and a coach who basically cut the salaries. It's crazy. What a time.
Where is Tark? Where is Tark? My man, my friend Jerry Tarkanian, which is the what? I had to stop paying the players. These quotes are just great. But he got a hungry team.
There you go.
So he's like, screw it. We're not going to win these NIL battles anyway. It doesn't matter. I've kind of always wondered how that would work, and it seems to be working.
Yeah, Dan, we're in this time of transformation with athlete compensation and the whole industry. And I think it's fascinating to learn how different schools and different coaches are approaching it. And it will be a different approach. It will change next year with the revenue share, I'm sure. A lot of this would change. But for right now, it's been fascinating to see the approaches in Pat Narduzzi has a very different approach. While many schools are, kind of breaking the bank, so to speak, to keep players from leaving, and to pay players to stay, to recruit players, Narduzzi decided last year before the season to implement a tiering system where everybody got a little bit, and he worked with the collective. Who Chris Bickle is the big tech entrepreneur worth millions, who kind of runs their collective and certainly gives a lot to it. And so Chris and Pat decided last year we're going to do this tiering system. Everybody's going to get a little cut, right? I think there were like six or seven tiers. And after last season, they decided, you know what? We're going to abandon this. And we're basically going to cut out all the NIL or most of it, and we're just rewarding players who earn it. And a lot of those conversations will probably happen after this season, going into next season. There'll probably be an influx in NIL payments. And I talked to a couple players about this. In fact, one of the players, when I began the question of how is this new structure, NIL structure, going, the player said, coach told you about that? And I was like, yeah. Yeah, what? So I was like, what do you think about it? And he said, this is Brandon George. He's a 60-year linebacker there. And he said, I don't want to say that money had an impact on how we played last year in the 3-win season he's talking about, but the attitude about money did. And he really didn't want to talk any more about it. But it is an interesting approach that Narduzzi has taken. Now, there's been some other things, right? Changes at Pitt, as you mentioned, Dan. He fired four of the five offensive staff members, including the coordinator last year. Virtually all of them replaced them with a new offensive coordinator and a completely new staff. Offensive coordinator Cade Bell from Western Carolina came in, and he brought a few players with him, including Desmond Reed, who's having a great year, and Eli Holstein, Alabama quarterback. They got him out of the portal last December as well. So other things certainly have happened. And then the third thing, though, that has happened, Dan, is there's a bunch of players, specifically a few that were on defense after the season, that came in and asked for more money while Narduzzi and the NIL collective director were kind of contemplating this move to scale back and pull the NIL. A lot of players were asking for more or didn't agree with this process. And Narduzzi quite literally opened the office door and said goodbye, and they left.
Yeah, a couple of them to Colorado.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The Pitt coupon clippers, man.
Well, it's fascinating, and clearly the position of the pod is not that NIL is the devil at all. It's a good thing. It should happen. But it's fascinating to go to some of these places that have completely either counter-programmed it or just don't do it. Like, I've been at West Point for the last couple of days, where they are undefeated and having their best season probably since 1958. It's a completely foreign concept. They don't do any of that stuff. They get a salary, but what comes with the salary is cleaning a rifle and putting on a uniform and marching and all that sort of thing. That's where what you get paid for. You also play football, and you do really demanding academic stuff. And there's certainly a satisfaction, I think, that, hey, you can do it another way. It's not saying that they're better than anybody else or smarter, but they don't have locker room issues. They don't have people sitting around saying, well, that guy's getting more than I'm getting, any of that stuff. It's fascinating culture, really interesting to be around, as intense as any football program I have ever seen in my life. I mean, I've been around Georgia, a little bit around Alabama, because you didn't get to be able to do that very much with the Nick Saban days. But it is friggin' intense. And part of that is probably because they're playing Air Force, and it's a service academy rivalry this week. But they are very serious about being good at football, and they are good, and it's pretty fun to watch.
I think we always thought there were more ways to do this. It's not the highest paid team isn't always going to do it.
Right.
Sometimes it happens. It certainly doesn't hurt. It doesn't hurt in acquiring talent, but I'm sure they gave Holstein something. They didn't get him for nothing.
There are certainly players on the team that are getting something. Yeah.
Let's not get too carried away here, but you figure out what works for you. And then you say, okay, like, this is why I think there's so much, the whole bit where they're going to Congress is always what's bothered me, and try to rewrite the rules of the United States and get some kind of, we don't do Sherman antitrust. Well, it's like, well, we can't win a bidding war with Georgia. Well, you haven't beat Georgia in 40 years, bro. Like, let's not worry. You can still have a really good football program and a really good time. We don't need to redo the federal government because of that. It's the overreaction and the desire for control. Find a different way. It's funny. Paying everyone less or resourcing it out, and they got a better team. I mean, it's a great season for Pitt. Now, on the flip on this, a lot of buzz about the number one recruit in the country, class of 2025, Bryce Underwood, quarterback from Belleville, Michigan. He has been an LSU commit since January, where he was, all the talk was this was a significant NIL package he was going to get. You hear $3 million, things like that. Oh, it's rising. Michigan is making this massive push to get Bryce Underwood. Belleville is not very far from the Ann Arbor campus. I'm sure there are others involved also. I don't think anyone else is ever, you know, is a number one player until he's on your campus. It ain't over. Michigan, Harbaugh would not kind of go in like this. Michigan will, and their boosters, after having tasted 15-0 and tasted 4-4, are, I think they're four. Are they 4-3? What are they?
5-3.
4-4.
Five. I think they're 5-3.
5-3.
But it's a bad 5-3. Let's be honest.
It's a tough 5-3. They're poning it up. It's not just Dave Portnoy. Michigan's got a lot of money. Bidding war up to $5 million. Michigan just had its four-star quarterback commit, decommit. Kid out of Florida, he's bailing. So I think, you know, there's a lot of smoke that they're going to be able to flip Bryce Underwood. But here are these two. I just love the concept of like two rich fan bases just throwing piles of money at some random like family. It's not random, but
right.
I just 4 million, 5 million, like it was a racehorse or something. I mean, this is crazy, right? But bidding's going up. So that's the other way. And I think that's the part that I fear that this is the type of stuff that scares college football fans. Oh, my God, Michigan's just buying a quarterback. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, Pat? I mean, that's going to be the way of the world. And frankly, as we've talked about, that was often the way of the world behind the scenes and under the table back in the day. You know, Cam Newton. We don't have to go back there, but and he was worth the money. Not all of them are. I mean, good Lord, we could do a whole show naming off the basketball players that were paid a ton who never turned out to be very good. But does Michigan need a quarterback? Jeez, I hadn't noticed that they were struggling at that position. So, you know, it might be a fairly urgent situation for them, although – throwing a kid in right away next year as a true freshman might also be asking for trouble. But, this is going to happen, especially with quarterbacks. If you are clearly established as a top 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 kind of guy, it's a buyer's market. So I think that people will be out there working to be the top bid.
I'm hesitant to believe a whole lot of the numbers out there. And I say that because we've all had experience the last 3 years and NIL and the numbers. I go back to the quote, I think like last December from Cooper Manning to me about some of the numbers, that, you know, and he was revealing to me that these NIL numbers you hear out there, like I know the real numbers, Ross, and they're not the numbers that are out there. Like those are inflated. And so, and I'm not saying a bidding war is not happening, but I think it odd that specific numbers are getting out. And I think, I'm hesitant to believe a lot of it. And I wonder how the fact that the numbers are public, is helping a certain side, you know what I mean? Like this is there's a negotiating in public going on, it appears. And so I'm always like, oh, okay, is this real? And I don't know, Dan, you're obviously a little more plugged in with the Michigan side and all that. So I'm sure this is happening. I'm not doubting that. I just kind of like, I'm curious in the future rev share model, when you're going to be having these offers to players, these payment offers, I wonder, how much things will be made public in an effort to impact the negotiations.
Well, I'm not a Michigan booster, but I know Michigan. The hell I'm giving money. So, sorry, Bryce. I've seen you play. Excellent player. This kid's good. I'm not an LSU booster either, but I know boosters at both schools. I think the problem when it gets out there is because they have to go. They have to go to so many boosters and say, we're ponying up. We're going to make a $5 million offer. And that's how the interest. I have no idea how much they're actually bidding, paying the kid.
Well, it shouldn't be going to boosters anymore. Well, but I mean, it always will in a way. I get that.
But that's why it's out.
But like,
it should. But with like the ref show world, right?
Yeah.
Like a.
Yeah, I mean.
That's why. That's why this stuff leaks out, because it's not one guy saying, "I'll write the $5 million." It's they got their collective. So there's a lot of leaks, a lot of places for it to leak. Is it $5 million? Is I don't really care. I don't think the Underwoods do either. I think at some point it's like, well, you get enough, and we see this in free agency and pro sports. I've always been saying this for years. They don't always pick the guy who offers the most. It's like, well, we're comfortable here. We like this team. We like. If you're going to make $3 million, $4 million, or $5 million, or $10 million, you know, maybe there's a number. I think there's two things. One, is that great for the player? No, because everyone's going to be like, "Hey, man, this guy's worth not only you not 5-star, you carry that hype. Not only the number one player, but someone's paying like you're a $5 million guy at $8 million. Like that's a lot of pressure on a kid. But I do think it says to this. And eventually this is gonna happen. The players are gonna make more than the coach. This is not a $5 million per year thing. But nobody blinks at the idea that Patrick Mahomes makes probably, you know, what's he making, $50 million? And Andy Reid's making Andy Reid might be making 10. Nobody blinks at that because you go, well, we can get another Andy Reid. He's now that's kind of the extreme because he's a hell of a coach. But players make It's harder to find Patrick Mahomes than it is to find an Andy Reid. And it's a lot harder to find Bryce Underwood than it is to find a Sharon Moore. And so at some point, when does this flip? And in the past, all the money has gone one side. And it's been like, oh, pay the coach 10, 12, 14 million, pay the defensive coordinator, this, that. And you go, okay, they got all that stuff at Michigan right now. What they don't have is a guy who completed a pass 20 yards downfield.
It's flipping, right? It's flipping. We're seeing that happen. We're in the transition of it flipping. And I do wonder, I think we discussed this a while back about quarterback pay. And, you know, if teams are given what I've heard in the rev share era, football teams, football rosters, in between 14 and 17 million for a football roster based on the first year rev share numbers, how much of that will you spend on your quarterback? And you know, the numbers that are discussed out there, the high end for a quarterback is in the low to mid seven figures. And, you know, if the rev share number is set, you know, so let's just say 15 million for a football roster, well, that's around 10%. For one player, is that what's going to happen? Is that a good path to take? Is that where this is going? If these numbers for Bryce Underwood are accurate, they're projecting 8 to 10 to 12% of their revenue share for their football roster to be spent on a quarterback.
Well, the football industry has tended to overvalue quarterbacks, because when you get Patrick Mahomes, it changes everything. You know, that's why. But I mean, there were what, 6 quarterbacks taken in the first 15 picks or something in the draft last year? There's not 6 stars out of that group. There may end up being 3, but there's not 6. But that's what everybody feels like you need to do to get a quarterback. A couple of things on this as well, in terms of the numbers and maybe the folklore or exaggeration that goes with it. The Washington Post did a deep dive on trying to get NIL numbers from as many places as possible and showing exactly how hard it is to get good information. But one of the things that came out of that series of stories, incredibly hard. But one of the things that came out of that series of stories is, oh, people aren't making quite as much as you might think. You know, the mythology or the hysteria that, oh my God, there's just a bunch of these spoiled, rich, pampered athletes running around campus. Not really. Not really a lot of them. So there's that. And the other part of it is, if you're going to pay, Dan, to your point, you're going to pay your $5 million quarterback, and the pressure that comes along with that and the expectation, who was the top quarterback recruit of 2024? Is Dylan Raiola. he's playing pretty well right now, but he was thrown right into the fire.
Worth it.
Probably so, but right now he's the number 11 passer in the Big Ten on a 5-3 team. Okay? I mean, we'll see if next year, the year after, whatever, he turns Nebraska into a Big Ten championship contender or a playoff team. But they're neither now, and, you know, he's taking some lumps. I mean, I'm sure he has the potential to be worth it. But right now, he's just another quarterback in the Big Ten, really kind of below average.
Patrick Mahomes is getting 14.49% of the Chiefs cap this year.
Good for him.
Mm.
So, whatever that means. Speaking of Mahomes, his teammate, our rival podcast, the New Heights, we're very close in listenership. Travis and Jason Kelce were named People Magazine's sexiest podcast hosts.
Mm.
Hmm.
What the hell, people? We're right here.
They haven't tuned in? I know.
They must not be watching our video to see how handsome we are.
YouTube, yeah. We have the YouTube channel. Yeah. I mean, what the hell, man? Just because none of us are dating Taylor Swift? We never met her. Who knows?
Speak for yourself, Dan.
Yeah, that's true. Taylor Swift meets Ross. You don't know what is going to happen.
Yeah.
Got that South Mississippi voice.
Goodbye, number 87. You're out.
Yeah, we don't know. Jeez. Terrible. Terrible situation. All right, we'll be back with some intriguing games. All right, let's do some intriguing games this weekend. Now, we're going to pick five later, but we will pick up the ones that we also find. Sometimes there are some secret games that only we think is intriguing. But, Pat, are you intrigued? Anything intriguing you out there?
Many things intrigue me, many, many. But I'll start with a team we've talked a lot about this year, Indiana at Michigan State. Curtis Rourke is expected back, they think, after having thumb surgery and missing one game. Pretty quick turnaround there. I did something, the 40-yard dash on all the nemesis games this week, where your good team, mostly good teams, are playing teams that have dominated them. And this is one where Indiana's playing Michigan State. Michigan State has won 12 of the last 15. In the Big Ten East, there was the hierarchy at the top, but kind of the hierarchy in the middle to bottom, too. And Michigan State was almost always ahead of the Hoosiers. This time, the Hoosiers have the better team. Again, they have not trailed all season. At some point in time, they're going to end up behind in a game. How are they going to handle it? How well can Rourke play? Is he worried about getting a thumb hit? I think there's going to be a really interesting game. I don't think Michigan State can beat them. But I just want to see how Indiana reacts to the situation there in East Lansing.
We talk a lot about elimination, you know, playoff elimination games, and there are a couple that I want to get to for a couple teams. Minnesota travels to Illinois. You know, is Illinois a playoff team? They're 6-2. You know, if you look at their schedule, they do have a decent schedule on the way out here that they could, you know, win the rest and go 10-2. But this is, you know, a game they can't lose, you know, they need to win this one. So from here on out, you know, Illinois got to continue to win to get in. And Minnesota's played well, especially lately. So this is a big game for Illinois. I think the other one, the other eliminator I look at is Ole Miss going to Arkansas. You know, Ole Miss 6-2. Can they really can't afford a loss either. And they're going to be playing in a tough place to play. And the Razorbacks have shown flashes this year. So can Ole Miss and can Illinois, can they win these eliminator games and kind of remain in the conversation for an at-large berth going forward?
Yeah, it's a somewhat sparse weekend of games, so got to get intrigued. I am going to go with Duke visiting Miami, and Duke's coming off a tough loss. They're probably eliminated from the playoff, but still you got Manny Diaz going back to a program he used to lead in Miami. Now he's the Duke head coach. Miami is 8-0, but has flirted with disaster at plenty of times this year, as as the, it's exciting in Miami. They keep it exciting. Miami should win, I think, but you wonder, coming off the big Florida State victory, which obviously was not as more emotion because it's an in-state rivalry and all that. Where are the Canes? Duke's a tricky team. So Miami is on pace for the playoff. There's a lot there, a lot happening. They're talking, they own the state. They've got their chest puffed out. Beware of the Blue Devils. Beware of the Blue Devils on that. Pat?
Another nemesis game, Louisville at Clemson. Louisville's been in the league for a decade and has never beaten the Tigers. I think they're 0-8 against them. They've had a couple close calls. They've had a couple of beatdowns. I don't know whether they're good enough in this situation because Clemson has been on a tear, as we've talked about quite a bit. But Louisville, Jeff Brohm, has pulled a few upsets in his time. They're a 10.5-point dog, which is pretty much, but it's in Death Valley Saturday night. Want to see if Clemson can keep it rolling or if Louisville can throw a big old monkey wrench into the ACC race.
How about the Texas A&M Aggies leading the SEC heading to Columbia, South Carolina? In heading there with, I don't know, quarterback controversy, right? Did he announce yet a starting quarterback? I haven't seen. Did you guys see if Marcel Reed will start Wegman?
I have not seen anything declarative.
I haven't seen that. I'm guessing he's going to wait to the last minute like these coaches often do. But it's fascinating what the Aggies have been doing. They're obviously atop the SEC, control their destiny into winning the SEC championship, getting into the playoff. As we talked about last week, I think finally following, backing up all the cash and resources that they have there. And so this is a big one. It's a night game at Williams-Brice, which is a tough place to play. They are loud there. They get pretty wild there. And South Carolina's in a position where, you know, at 4-3, they really need to win as well. It's a big year for Shane Beamer and athletic director change there going on in the process of it. So big one for both of these programs, but especially for Texas A&M to remain atop the SEC. Can they get it done? And who do we see a quarterback? You know, do we see both play? Do we see Marcel Reed? He certainly seemed to me have won the job against LSU, but I guess we'll see.
Yeah, not bad, not bad. All right, so we'll pick five games in a minute. I had a couple things I got to clear up. Big result this week, the annual Iowa Best Tasting Municipal Water competition came out.
Huge.
And our guys have won. Ames, you're back.
Hooray!
Took down Keokuk. Keokuk had stepped in and won a couple years in a row, left us with plenty of reason to make fun of Iowa State for Ames, and then Iowa State by proxy for their big song saying they got the best tasting water around, which was not the case, but they're back. They won the Best Tasting Water in Iowa, also the People's Choice Award at the annual conference in Coralville. Boy, that's got to be one.
We missed out on that, didn't we? Yeah, we missed out on that one. I mean, I cover a lot of conferences. I should have put that on the list, too.
Sure, I got to go to Coralville for the conference water chorus. Yeah. Look, you
Does
can't
anyone
keep Ames
there
down.
Drink anything but water?
I would hope so.
Like at the, do they have a cocktail party where they just drink water?
There's water in everything, Dan. Water in beer, water in booze.
I know, come but on. Like if you're at the water convention.
Yeah. I would hope you drink everything but
the
water.
The spiked water, Dan.
Yeah. The Coralville, you know, gentlemen's club must just be out of control that weekend. What a party weekend that is.
But you can't keep Ames down. You cannot keep Ames down. They will come back in the water race. I'm glad they've returned to the top.
Well, our hero, John Dunn, the Water and Pollution Control Director of Ames, we feel Ames water is entirely deserving of the attention. Ames residents have embraced and celebrated our great water for decades. We feel tremendous pride in producing such valued commodity.
There you go.
Take that. Fifth time winning since 2011. Ames will now enter the national competition next summer in Denver.
Ooh, I'm going.
I didn't know about this.
I'm gonna cover it.
Expense.
I told you once I was in Kentucky. I was in Lexington, Kentucky, covering something at UK, and my hotel was the one right by Rupp Arena there. Whatever it was
Hyatt.
Attached.
Hyatt.
The Hyatt. It was. I got in the elevator, and they were having the Kentucky Morticians Conference, and everyone had their little badge. And I was like, oh my God, the morticians are going to take over the lobby bar. The stories you would hear.
Oh God. Not the most weird lively crew. But I'm bump.
You never know. You get a couple pops in those guys. I want to know what the water convention people do. Finally, one more, just an update. We had the cocaine pizza in Dusseldorf.
Yeah.
People really seem to like that one.
They did.
Yeah.
Number 40.
Yeah.
Don't order the number 40. You'll get a bag of Coke and a visit from the German police on the side of your pizza. You can hear that whole story. Well, guess what? America not backing down. Some guy in Wisconsin operating the famous Yeti's Pizza in Stoughton, Wisconsin, about 20 miles southeast of Madison. He ran out of oil while making his pizzas. So he went to an industrial, this is in the New York freaking Times. This is how big this story was. He went to an industrial kitchen nearby, shared by multiple businesses, and took some oil that belonged to a different business. Well, guess what? It was cannabis oil.
Uh-oh.
Oh, God. Whoops.
He put cannabis oil on some of the pies, leading, the quote, operator did not notice the label on the cap. Likely story. The customers of famous Yetis had a reaction, let's just say. Unexpected physical symptoms after eating the pizza, according to the police statement.
They wanted another pizza.
But that not was the painful reaction. Symptoms.
Yeah.
Yeah, not, yeah, that's right.
The munchies.
I have a whole pie.
Dude, what is going on in pizza? They're losing their marbles. They're doing blow over in Germany. They're getting stoned in Wisconsin. I'm scared.
What's the next drug we can put on a pizza?
When they say hot and ready, I don't know what's coming next.
No, I know. Sprinkle any meth on there, huh?
Jeez. Don't give them any ideas.
Yeah. Mushrooms, the psychedelic kind.
Yeah. There you go.
Oh, yeah. All right. Maybe we need our own pizza place. Anyway, be careful with your pizza. Dude in Wisconsin, come on. He knew what he's putting on there. All right. We'll be back. Race for the case. I'm in the lead. Joe says I'm tied for the lead. I think I'm in the lead. Tied. 31-22-1. Joe and I looking good. Pat, 27-26-1. Ross, 25-27-2. So there's our standings. Let's pick them, though. Number three, Ohio State, giving 3.5 in Happy Valley. Penn State, number four. Both will be there. High noon, Saturday. Pat?
I've seen this movie before. It ends the same way every time. Penn State comes in with hope and promise and leaves with an L. And I think it'll be an L slightly larger than 3.5 points. So I'm going to take the Buckeyes, who have better talent, even if they have not put it all together with great regularity. I think this is time to do it. And I see Ohio State winning and covering.
You know, Ohio State's won 7 straight, I think. Won 15 of 18 in the series. Maybe 11 of 12.
9 of 10.
So I get...
11 of 12, yeah. Maybe. Yeah, 11 of 12, maybe. I don't know.
So I get the doubt in that Penn State can do this. And I don't know that they'll do it, but I think they'll certainly stay close enough to cover the 3.5 that Nittany Lions will. Ohio State's offensive line has struggled enough and now is without 2 players, and they're having to shuffle about the line. I think it's enough for the Nittany Lions to either win outright or at least stay within a field goal.
I feel like I'm definitely going to regret doing this because of what you mentioned, Pat. James Franklin seems to not be able to get over these big opponents. But one thing really stands out to me for this matchup. Abdul Carter has been phenomenal. He might be playing himself into the first defensive player drafted in the upcoming draft for how well he's transitioned from linebacker to defensive end. Right now, Ohio State's dealing with a lot of injuries on their offensive line. They're down two left tackles. I'm kind of banking on that being enough for Penn State to get home, to get a turnover, a big sack, whatever it is, at home with all that energy. But as I said, I'm sure that I'm probably going to regret this. I'm going to take Penn State to cover.
This is a guy saying I'm going to regret picking Penn State at 4 days after he ate 60 buffalo.
I didn't regret that. That was
I know. A,
that
no was regret. A... That's how scared you are to pick Penn State.
Exactly.
You sat down and said, I'll have 60 boneless chicken wings, which are just chicken nuggets, sauce nuggets, at Applebee's of all places, with no fear. And yet you're afraid. You're regretting. You're stating your regret. I will have no regret. I'm picking the Buckeyes. I think they wake up. I think they play really well in this game. Offensive line concerns me. Tyler Warren from Penn State just concerns me, as he should. Better concern Jim Knowles' defense, but I like the Buckeyes here. They got so much talent, and I think this is the one they get it going on. So I'll take that. No fear. Number 10, Texas A&M, given 2.5 at South Carolina, 7:30 p.m., ABC. Ross, you discussed the game earlier. Who are you picking?
Yeah. Of course, I didn't follow the rules and discuss the game that we're picking.
There really aren't that many intriguing games this week.
Typical me. We talked about, I was doing some Googling while we were talking, and yeah, Mike Elko has not announced as of Thursday morning a starter, either Marcel Reed or Connor Wegman. So we don't know yet. I don't know that it will matter. I think A&M goes in there into a hostile environment at night and pulls out a win, a close one, but enough to cover the 2.5. And the Aggies remain atop the league.
I'm going to take South Carolina here, upset special. Shane Beamer's another guy who is good in some underdog spots, and this one I think sets up well for his team. I would be shocked if Marcel Reed isn't the starter, but we'll see. A&M is a very good team having a very good season, but I just don't see them being on a level where they're going to be rolling into the season-ending game against Texas 10-1 and undefeated in the SEC. So they're going to trip up somewhere, and this is it. Gamecocks.
Pat just wants the opportunity to say lone cock again. I'm fearing that. I'm hoping that somebody else picks South Carolina here. It's not going to be me, though. One thing that's very important to note in this matchup, I know that this is tough road environment at night for Texas A&M to deal with. South Carolina's offensive line is statistically one of the worst in the country. They have done a terrible job of getting pushed on the line of scrimmage, running the ball. They've averaged pretty good rushing totals per game, but they don't get consistent push. They also are very bad at protecting Lenora Sellers. We saw so far over the past few games for Texas A&M that they dominated against a bad Missouri offensive line. They got pressures against the best offensive line in the country, possibly in LSU. And then now you get this situation where you can feast again. I'm a little wary of if Marcel Reed starts, if he's able to have success, because we know that South Carolina's front seven and their run defense is so good. But I'm going to take A&M. They've got all the momentum. Unless they completely falter and fall for this trap, I think they're going to be able to do it.
There will be no lone cock.
Oof.
I'm going cock Commanders as well.
Okay.
Sorry, Pat.
No, that's fine. Join me with the cocks. Come on.
Oh, shit. At a certain point, I wonder, like, do I have to, like, bleep this? Do I have to, am I going to get yelled
at? We didn't name the team.
Exactly. This is what South Carolina calls
themselves. Did the University of South Carolina call you? Did they say, what should we name the team? Didn't
they
say
did
that
not.
To me.
I was not consulted.
Not
so
my fault.
We're just going with what they gave us.
We did extensive reporting on that, on the whole controversy over who was the real chicken or whatever. I can't.
Oh, yeah.
Remember that thing?
Oh, that was great.
Listen.
Yo soy el cock commander.
This is the hangover special of all time. Texas A&M's coming off this massive win. Everyone's excited. Big emotional Saturday night game. And now you got to travel to South Carolina. South Carolina's coming off a bye. They're going to get now the targets on A&M. You're going to give me a couple points, 2.5. I'll take it. I don't know what will happen. I like Texas A&M, but I'm kind of with Pat. This is a hard game. If Texas A&M wins this game, this will be far more impressive than just beating a whatever South Carolina is, whatever their record is, 4-4, something like that. I don't know. Because this is not easy to – this is a trap hangover game of all of that you get. It's just too hard to do. So if they can have the focus to win this game on the road, you're coming off the hangover. You got a hangover from the last game, and it's very loud in Williams-Brice, and it's not a good place for a hangover. So although generations of Cock Commander fans have persevered through that. So I'm taking A&M. I mean, I'm taking South Carolina. Number 18, Pitt, at number 20, SMU. SMU giving 7.5, massive ACC tilt in Dallas. 8 p.m. on the ACC network. I guess they weren't planning on this one being a big one. Back to Pat. Yeah, back to Pat.
Yeah. I will say one of the disappointing things about this week, there are no kickoffs after 8 p.m. We don't get the, midnight to 1 a.m., 2 a.m. window of insanity. So get your insanity where you can. And I think this should be a good, entertaining game. Point spread's too much. I wonder if that's based on the uncertainty about Eli Holstein. And according to Pat Narduzzi, he's going to be okay. He's going to play. I'll trust that he's telling the truth on that. And I will take Pitt in the points there. SMU's a good team. This is going to be a good matchup, and I think there's going to be a lot of points on the board. But I am rolling with the Panthers here to certainly keep it within 7.5. I like that hook. Give me Pitt to cover.
Same. And I was at Pitt practice on Tuesday, and Eli Holstein was running around just fine. So I spoke to him after practice. So I think he's going to be fine in play. And I don't know that Pitt will win, but it certainly will stay inside of a touchdown. This seems like a really big number. Give me Pitt.
I really like the number as well with that hook at 7.5. And also, we've watched both these teams. They're both really good. I don't think SMU is more than a touchdown better than Pitt. Understandably, the quarterback situation that you've brought in here could complicate things. But plain and simple, both these squads have gutted out close victories against lesser opponents. They've played messy games. I don't think SMU is heads above Pitt. If Pitt plays as well as they did defensively last week, and certainly the turnovers were a big factor in it, probably not going to have 5 interceptions like they did against Kyle McCord in Syracuse. But Pitt defensively, I think, is strong enough, could disrupt Kevin Jennings just a little bit enough to keep this thing within range. They could certainly possibly win it as well, but I think for sure that 7.5 is doable.
Yeah, I'm taking Pitt. The 7.5, I like that little, get that half. Too many points. Much of what, I'm not going to repeat everything just said, but I'll take the Panthers. Cocktail party. You see they announced the future sites for 2 years of the cocktail party while Jacksonville Stadium gets redone again. They're going to play one in Atlanta, one in Tampa. I guess Athens and Gainesville, not available. I'd rather they just play these things on campus, but hey.
Mm-hmm.
Georgia given 16.5. Florida against number 2 Georgia, 16.5. 3:30 on ABC. Ross?
Whew. Big spread. A lot of points. I understand why. I know the trajectory of these two programs, but it's too many points for me. And Florida's been playing better. Probably should have beat Tennessee. Certainly rolled over Kentucky. And a huge pressure game for Billy Napier. And I think they play well, not well enough to win though, but maybe, but certainly well enough to stay within 16 and a half. So give me the Gators.
I'm with you there. Florida has definitely I'm with you on Florida. They have turned a bit of a corner, more competitive all the way around. I'm a little concerned. I mean, I'm scared that, you know, this could easily end up like 43-10 for Georgia, but it is a rivalry game. They've had 2 weeks here to get DJ Lagway further up to speed, freshman QB. So I think that the Gators are ready to at least make it a game. They may lose by 14. They may lose by 10. I don't see them winning, but I also don't see them losing by more than 16.5. So I'm taking Florida on the points.
Florida's been better, but I can't put my faith in a true freshman quarterback going up against Georgia in this rivalry. I think that Georgia's the type of team that smells blood, and they're starting to hit their stride as well. I think they can cover this. I think that one or two turnovers from Lagway bust this thing wide open, and that Georgia can cover that 16.5 and win by 17 or more.
Same, taking the dogs. Florida's without a wide receiver, without a cornerback. I think late Bulldogs pull away, so I will take Georgia in that one. Finally, Wisconsin at Iowa. Iowa is giving 3, 7:30 on NBC. There's also a really good game with Texas Tech visiting Iowa State. Big weekend in Iowa. They win the award. Iams gets the award. Also, water-related news in Iowa. Kirk Ferentz revealed he was thinking about how good his punter has been lately. Did you see this? He said, I was thinking about it today while in the shower.
I think about punters in the shower all the time, Dan.
Kirk. The day a head coach has really to, he just like toot it all out. Calgon, take me away, right? Mm-hmm. And what is Kirk Ferentz doing in his morning shower? He's thinking about his punter. He's thinking about punting. Fantastic quote. So, the things you learn at the weekly press conferences are just, you can't watch them all. That's the problem. There's too many. It's just funny. Anyway, good job, coach. Anyway, I was given 3. Pat?
Yeah, I'm a little intrigued about the Hawkeye quarterback situation. Brendan Sullivan came off the bench and sparked him a bit against Northwestern. Threw for 80 yards, ran for 40 yards and a touchdown. See where they go there. But Wisconsin just hasn't been able to prove it consistently to me. And Iowa always is consistent. So I'm going to take the Hawkeyes, lay the 3, and figure that they win. On, you know, they'll win by a field goal plus a safety plus a couple coffin corner punts, and there's more shower material for Kirk Ferentz.
I'm also taking the Hawkeyes. You guys see the over under in this game for 40.5. Good old fashioned Big Ten over under. Give me the Hawkeyes in a fun defensive duel. To cover the 3.
I wonder if the Brendan Sullivan performance was more revenge fueled. So I'm thinking here that Wisconsin, I really was impressed by the way that they played in the first half against Penn State and then just got outlasted by them once Prabula came into the game. I think Wisconsin can do this. Iowa's been super. I know that they've been the epitome of consistency, but they've been up and down on offense. I think Wisconsin could pull this thing out and to cover the 3 at the bare minimum.
Man, this is a rough pick. I'm going to go with Iowa. They've been scoring. I think they'll score. I think they'll be able to cover. I wouldn't pick this game. I don't like the 13.5 that Cyclones are given either. That's a tough game, Texas Tech. I mean, that's a huge game. Mm-hmm. Iowa State remain unbeaten, stay in this thing, so. Iowa's the place to be. Get out in that lake. The weather's been great. Get your boat back out there. Just sit there and watch Cyclones and Hawkeyes all weekend. Don't even need to go to the games. I'll take Iowa in this game, but it's tough. All right, lock of the week. Who's got one?
I got one.
All right, Ross.
We all remember a few years ago when, or last year. Was it last year? Yeah, it was last year. When Diego Pavia went to Auburn and won. I don't know that the same thing happens, but Auburn is a touchdown favorite against Vanderbilt, which is a shocking spread. And so I think Diego and the boys at least cover that. So give me the lock of the week as the boys from Vandy. And I don't know how often we've had a lock of the week from Vanderbilt, Dan, but here we are.
Not this way.
Vandy on the road. But that, hey, the Albuquerque Tinkler is done in
Hugh Freeze
2 years in a row. He got him when Hugh was at Liberty, and he got him when Hugh was at Auburn. So the Tinkler owns Hugh Freeze. My lock of the week, Dan already mentioned the game. I had this circle before we started. I love Duke getting 20 against Miami. Duke plays close games, and Miami tends not to blow out teams this year. They win, but they're not blowing people out in the ACC. So I will take the Blue Devils and 20 points, and Manny Diaz having his team absolutely breathing fire on his behalf in South Florida. Give me Duke.
My lock this week, and this is going to sound like a crazy one, I'm taking Kentucky plus 16.5 versus Tennessee. I think what we've learned is that it's the margins in the SEC this year are a lot closer. I know that Kentucky's had a rough stretch recently. This could be a bounce back opportunity. Tennessee has had inconsistent performances week in and week out, and it feels
when Hugh was at Auburn. So the Tinkler owns Hugh Freeze. My lock of the week, Dan already mentioned the game. I had this circle before we started. I love Duke getting 20 against Miami. Duke plays close games, and Miami tends not to blow out teams this year. They win, but they're not blowing people out in the ACC. So I will take the Blue Devils and 20 points, and Manny Diaz having his team absolutely breathing fire on his behalf in South Florida. Give me Duke.
My lock this week, and this is going to sound like a crazy one, I'm taking Kentucky plus 16.5 versus Tennessee. I think what we've learned is that it's the margins in the SEC this year are a lot closer. I know that Kentucky's had a rough stretch recently. This could be a bounce back opportunity. Tennessee has had inconsistent performances week in and week out, and it feels like they're not playing to the ability against weaker opponents. So I think that they're going to slow down here a bit. Kentucky, good defense, gets after Nico. They cover that 16.5.
All right. I'm taking Kansas State giving 13.5 at Houston. Every man a Wildcat hits the road. I'm not Houston's got 3 wins. They're coming off a nice win against Utah, but I think that says as much about Utah as Houston. This is a team that lost 42-10 to Kansas. Got shut out by UC, got shut out by Iowa State. I think Kansas State is a methodical team, and we'll go in there and beat Houston by more 2 touchdowns or more, and move to 8-1. So I like the Kansas State there. All right, that's our show. We'll be back on Sunday to overreact to it all. Happy Halloween to those who observe. Well, everyone observed Halloween, and at least we didn't do one of those like gimmicky "which the best candy" drafts.
Oh.
Mm.
Yeah. What's your costume this year?
Those are terrible. Yeah.
That's the kind of stuff that probably, you know, would help you win the People magazine sexiest podcasters, but we're all about substance here. We're all about substance.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
All right. We thank Joe because he's a producer who wouldn't come up with such a bad gimmick.
That's
thank
right.
Thank you, Joe.
Good thank job, you. Joe.
I support the cocaine on pizza. We're not doing any stupid candy draft, so I can support that.
I love the Twix bar, man. Love the Twix bar.
Hell no. We want blow on our pizza. That's what we want. Let's go to Dusseldorf. Live show. See you Sunday. Talk to you later.